This is Digital Story Podcast number 710, October 22nd, 2019. Today's theme is The Evolution of the Olympus OMD EM5 Mark III. I'm Derek Story. I first learned about the original EM5 in a closed-door meeting at CES 2012. Olympus broke the news to the public the next month, and we started a whole new era of mirrorless photography. Now, with the Mark III ready to hit the streets, I thought we'd take a look at this latest model and the 8-year journey that it took to get here. I hope you enjoy the show. Well, it's been a little over 4 years since we've been able to talk about this camera. Quite a length of time in between Mark II and Mark III. But Mark III is really something else. So I want to do a couple things here. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about the specs for the Mark III, just so we're up to speed on what this camera is. And then I want to go back to 2012 and talk about the Mark I, because it's an important camera in the world of mirrorless photography. And I think the road that we took to get here to the Mark III is an interesting one. And in a lot of ways, really symbolizes, you know, Olympus themselves these days. So I think the EM5 is, you know, the mirrorless camera in the Olympus lineup. I mean, we have the Pro flagship at, you know, one end, and then we have the Pens at the other end. But this camera is sort of really at the heart of the matter, and I think it's worth spending some time not only on the Mark III, but the journey that it took to get here. So let's start with looking at this latest camera and what we have to deal with here, and we have a lot. So the sensor has been upgraded from the 16 megapixel sensor to the 20 megapixel sensor. And, you know, that's important. We need to get as much resolution as possible out of these little cameras. And 20 megapixels is great. I shoot with it all the time. Have no problems. It has a TruePic 8 quad core processor. I'm going to touch on this more in a bit, but I think this is a very important change to the Mark III. It has a dual fast, FAST AF, so it has contrast and phase detection AF, 121 points all cross type on chip phase detection. Okay, that's a nice focusing system. 5-axis image stabilization with up to 6.5 shutter speed steps compensation with Sync IS. And I'm assuming that Sync IS is when we have optical stabilization in the lens. And then, of course, we have sensor based in the camera, and the two will work together with certain lenses, such as with the 300 millimeter lens that Olympus makes. 2.36 million dot OLED electronic viewfinder, 3-inch variangle touch LCD, so they hung on to that from the previous model. Dust, splash, and freeze proof, which I think is, you know, a very important aspect of this camera from the very beginning. Okay, the mechanical shutter will go 10 frames per second in high mode and 6 frames per second in low mode. And the electronic shutter will do 30 frames per second in high mode and 10 frames per second in low mode. That's moving along pretty good. We have 4K video capture now. That was a question mark about the Mark II. I'll talk more about that. 30 frames, 25 frames, and 24 frames per second. With flat picture mode, which is very nice for people that want to edit their video. I really love seeing USB in-camera charging. That's, every camera that has it, I just love having that option. The nice thing that Olympus does, however, is even though it has in-camera charging, they still give you an external charger in the box. Much appreciated, guys. Pro Capture lag-free electronic shutter mode. We first saw Pro Capture in the EM1 Mark II, I believe. Yes. So these are some pretty darn good specs. And in fact, a lot of people have referred to the Mark III as a mini EM1. And I think there's really good reason for that when you look at what we just talked about here. But its evolution actually took a different path than the EM1 path. And I really think it's worth going back to 2012 to understand the real significance of this camera. The first DM5 was actually a fairly simple camera to operate. It had a mode dial on the top, on the left top side. And by the way, I have pictures of the Mark I and Mark II with the show notes, so you can take a look at them. So it had a mode dial on the top left side, and you know that was it on the left side. And it had PASM, so it had program, aperture priority, shutter priority, and manual. There was iAuto there, movie, scene mode, and art filter options. So just a mode dial on the left side. And then the right side was very sleek in the sense that there were two unmarked twin control dials with one function button and a movie button. And that was it on the top deck there. Now, anyone who's shot with Olympus cameras knows that you can program all those things basically the way that you want. And that's what's so cool about this camera. The functionality was fantastic because you go, all right, I've got these two dials on top. I got a couple function buttons, and I can just sort of make this thing do whatever I want. And that's exactly what I did with it. And I loved it. I just absolutely loved shooting with it. I loved the look of the mini SLR instead of the pen look. Now, I like the pen F a lot, but you have to remember, up until when the EM5 came out, we didn't have anything with this sort of look. And it was, you looked at it and you go, that is so cool. It's so cool. You want one even though you haven't even shot with it yet. Now, the body was weather resistant. And the handling was very comfortable, had a nice little grip, not a big grip like with the EM1, but a nice little bump to hang on to and a thumb rest as well. And in fact, I still shoot with the EM5 Mark I today. It's my studio camera that I use for product shots for the film camera shop. And it's great. I got a little Leica lens on there, the little 25mm f1.4 Leica on there, which is the lens that's on there in the pictures that I put in the show notes. And that thing just keeps on chugging. It is a beautiful camera to work with. I have a couple different grips that go with it. The one I have on there most of the time is the one that has the extra battery in it. So I have basically two batteries available to me. This was all a big deal when it came out. I mean, not only was there the camera itself, but it had this two-part grip that you could get. The first part was just a nice little grip with a shutter button, all that kind of stuff, like what we would normally see. And then the second part connected to the first part, and it had a spare battery in it. So you could go a little bit bigger with a spare battery, or you could go mid-size with the grip, or you could really sleek it down and have no grip at all and just go with the camera itself. And having these sort of options, say, okay, I'm okay with a little bigger camera because I want the extra battery because I'm going to be in the field or something like that. Or no, I really want to go small and light today for street photography, so I'm going to go with no grip at all. At this time, in 2012, we're in heaven. We're in heaven. We have this small little camera that's very powerful, 16-megapixel sensor, can program basically any way that I want. I can afford it. It was an affordable camera. I believe it came out at $1,299 without the grip at that time, as memory recalls. Okay, now one complaint about it in terms of functionality, and we're still talking about the Mark I here, was that the buttons were a little spongy. they were a little spongy, and that was because of the weather-resistant material that Olympus built into the camera. Some people did not like the feel. Some didn't care at all. I was actually in the camp where I didn't care at all. I mean, the buttons worked great. And they pushed back a little bit. They had a little spongy feel when you use them. But I also acknowledged that this was weather-resistant material, and I really wanted this camera to be weather-resistant. So I really didn't think about it much. But some people did complain about that. And then it had a few other little things that could have been better placed. I think round one with the button placement, there were some oddities They put the play button way up at the top, you know, on the back. And it was a very small button. And it was right next to another button. And they were a little hard to get to. And I forget, when I'm shooting with the other Olympus cameras that have the play button down in the lower part of the back panel, I forget that the EM5 Mark I had it way up at the top. And, you know, I have to kind of go do that. And then it had a kind of a funky little power switch that was pretty small on the back panel. That wasn't the easiest thing to use. Even though I liked the simplicity of the top deck, I thought that was really well designed. I thought that the back panel could use a little improvement. Again, at the time, before we had any other, before we had the Mark II or the Mark III, I'm not really thinking that much about it. It's like one of those little things that's in the back of your mind, but I'm not pining away for the next model, waiting for those buttons to be redesigned, because you don't even know if they're going to do that, right? I'm shooting away with this camera. I'm loving it. It's performing really well. And then in February of 2015, the Mark II is released. So that wasn't too bad of a wait. It was, you know, essentially 3 years. It felt a little long at the time because, you know, we're seeing a lot of churn with digital cameras in those days. You know, cameras were evolving quickly. And 3 years was, it felt like, you know, maybe a year longer than what we wanted it to be. But nonetheless, when the Mark II came out in 2015, again, I really felt like saying, this is worth the wait. It really was. And this was a different camera than what we saw with the Mark I. And one of the things that Olympus wanted to do with the EM5 Mark II was make it a very good video camera. Now, I don't know if that was out of focus groups or feedback or what, but they wanted to have an excellent video camera. And indeed, it is. It is. Now, there was a little bit of discussion because it didn't have 4K video. And even though 4K was new at the time, a lot of people were hoping that the EM5 Mark II would have 4K. Olympus went the conservative route and went with just regular HD video. But oh my, what beautiful HD it was. So a few things that they did here to really enhance this experience. They replaced the up and down tilting LCD with a fully articulated flip-out style. So again, if you're shooting video, it just gives you more angles to work with. The sensor-based image stabilization was further refined and really excellent for video. Five-axis stabilization, really good for video. And a lot of the demos that we saw at the time were people moving while recording and how well that stabilization kept the shot steady. It did really a good job. It was some pretty excellent stuff. The top deck really got more sophisticated. It got chunkier up there, and they put a lot of stuff. One of the things that they did that was really good is they put the on-off switch over on the left side next to the mode dial, and it was a nice on-off switch, a traditional Olympus on-off switch if you ever shot with any of their film cameras. So that was really good, because that little fiddly one on the back of the EM5 Mark I was kind of tough to work with. This was a definite improvement. And then on the right side, they put four buttons and two dials. I mean, it's happening up there. All of that stuff was programmable. So you could really make this camera just about anything that you wanted. Now, it also had that cool grip, like we talked about before, where you could have the extra battery. Unfortunately, it wasn't the same grip as we had before in terms of you couldn't use the earlier grip part. However, as I recall, you could use the battery part, the second part, with the Mark II. But one of the things that they did was they added a mic jack to the camera body itself. But then on the grip, they had a headphone jack. So if you're using the grip, then, and you know, go ahead and add the extra battery if you want, which is kind of a good idea for video, then you had both, you know, input and output, audio input and output right there on the camera. Again, this thing was designed, you know, for capturing video. It really was. And then to just to put the icing on the cake, on the back side of the camera up near the top, they put this function lever. So you had function one and function two. And it was just a nice little lever you could just hit with your thumb. And the way that you could program it if you wanted, you could do all sorts of things. But I really think that for this camera in particular, the logical thing to do was to have function one with the lever be for still photography. And then you just hit it with your thumb, move it down to function two for video. And it just, you had all of your settings, all your video settings ready to go when you went to two. And then when you went to back to one, you had all your still settings ready to go. It just made it so easy to move back and forth from stills to video. Now we can do similar things with other cameras. We can go into video recording mode, but this would remember all of our particular settings for that video recording mode in two, and then in one, all of our particular settings for still photography. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant, and they kept that for the Mark III. I'm really happy to say that. They added a cool little 40 megapixel high-res shot feature to the Mark II, which at the time was kind of cool. Now you had to use a tripod for it, but if you really needed, you know, that high resolution shot, you could do it. You could do it with a tripod, and the camera did very well with it. And then the really nice thing about the Mark II, the M5 Mark II, on top of everything that I've already said, is that they continued to refine the camera through multiple firmware updates. And Olympus has been fantastic about firmware updates. And so this camera continued to get better while you owned it. And, you know, okay, I mean, so that's like a promise of the digital age, but how often do we really get to realize that promise? Olympus did that both with the EM5 Mark II and with the EM1 Mark II, both cameras have had great firmware updates. Now, the thing that held back, in my opinion, the Mark I and the Mark II, well, one of the things was computer processing power. I think I would have shot with the Mark II all the time, even for professional work, had it done a better job with burst mode. And what I mean by that, the buffer would fill up and then it would have to write to the card, and it would actually pause while it was writing to the card. And you know, that's tough when you're shooting sports and, you know, some even portraits. I ran into this problem even with portraits, you know, when I want to shoot in burst mode. So that was a real drawback for me, and that sort of kept both cameras more in my slower modes, so to speak, right? You know, travel, I didn't need that buffer as much. Street photography, I actually didn't need it as much. You know, in the studio, I don't need it. So there was a lot of situations where I could use that camera, and I used the Mark II for video a lot, including for live streaming. It was a terrific live streaming camera. But I wanted to use the Mark II all the time, and I couldn't because of that buffer filling up. And that's where I had to go to the EM1 and ultimately the EM1 Mark II, just for that raw processing power. And then the second limitation on both the models, the one and the two, was the 16 megapixel sensor. So a great sensor, produced lovely images, but there is a difference for me between the 16 megapixel and the 20 megapixel sensor in just everyday use. Having those extra 4 megapixels is really handy. So that brings us now back to the Mark III. All these things that I talked about, one way or another, have been addressed in this latest iteration. It's not a straight evolution, and this is what's curious to me. So the EM5 Mark III on the top deck now has been simplified. So now it goes back more to like the Mark I model when you look on top. It's a little bit more sophisticated than the Mark I, but it isn't that array of buttons and dials that we have with the Mark II. So they have simplified the look of the Mark III, you know, and made it sleek and kind of had that cool look that the Mark I had. But inside, they put a quad-core processor that really, you know, picks up the game and really, you know, that solves that problem that I was talking about in a number of different ways. Just now it has real horsepower to handle those burst modes and, you know, to do all the functions, you know, ProRes, all that stuff that we really wanted to do. So they solved that problem. And then they also put, the 20 megapixel sensor in there. So that solved the other problem. And they added 4K video, which, you know, some people really wanted in the Mark II, but I just don't think it was quite time yet for Olympus to do that. But now we have it here in the Mark III. Plus, we do have the Pro Capture. Now we got all the goodies, and horsepower is no longer an issue of the camera. So what we've done is we've sort of returned to the cleaner look of the Mark I, but with the firepower of the EM1 Mark II. And I just think that this is going to be a winning combination for Olympus. And I really do think it was worth the 4-year wait. Now, I had hoped that they would come out at $999 for this camera, $1,000. But, you know, really, when you look at everything that's in there, the price tag that they have on it right now, you know, which is a few hundred dollars more, really is, you know, worth the camera that you're getting. I think it was more just wishful thinking on my behalf that, $1,000, boom, I could get it, you know, right away. I may have to wait just a bit now to purchase the Mark III, either, you know, raising the funds, right, or waiting to see if the price comes down, you know, 6 months up the road. So we'll wait and see on that. But I am going to get it, and I'm really looking forward to having it. I love the form factor. I love the way the camera looks. And now there's no internal reason not to get it because it has all that muscle under the hood. So I just think Olympus has done a fine job with the EM5 Mark III. And I like the way that, you know, they've evolved the camera. You know, they looked at the EM5 Mark I and the Mark II, sort of took the good things from both of them and then created this camera, added a dash of the EM1 Mark II to really knock it out of the park. Can't wait to have it be my everyday carry around camera. I'll let you know when that happens. One place I know we're probably going to get to play with the EM5 Mark III is at our LA street photography experience coming this March. And that's because we got Mike Baining, Olympus educator, joining us, and he's going to bring along some cameras. And that's one of them. Now, I hope to have my own EM5 Mark III by then. If I don't, however, I'm going to be standing in line with the rest of our workshop crew to get my hands on it and play with it. Hopefully, we'll have more than one, but we're definitely going to have one there for us to work with. And it's a great camera for what we're going to be doing in Los Angeles on March 13 through 15. We're going to explore these excellent locations. We're going to look at the architecture, which a lot of people don't realize how wonderful LA architecture is. We're going to go to places that you see on TV shows and movies all the time, like Venice Beach. We're going to go to Santa Monica Pier. It's just really going to be an enjoyable and action-packed workshop. We're going to ride the metro around. You know, a lot of people think that you have to be in a car the whole time you're in Los Angeles area. Well, they have excellent metro system. We're really going to be cool dudes and dudettes with cool cameras exploring LA. If you want to be a part of this, if you want to join our LA street photography experience and work with Mike Baining and myself, then all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, and reserve your spot. Just get on the reserve list. You can do it right there. Or there's a link in the show notes, and you can do that as well. And this workshop's also listed on the Olympus site too, which is, you know, that's kind of cool as well. Hope to see you in March. And as I said, we're going to have some nice gear to play with as well. Amateur Photographer magazine celebrates 100 years of Olympus. So I first saw this on their site, and I have a link to their site in the show notes. And I go, that looks interesting. So I go, okay, I want to read that issue of the magazine. And I go to their site all the time, but I hadn't, you know, downloaded any of their magazines. I didn't even really know how to do that. There's one bookstore in town, Barnes & Noble, that carry their magazines. But I said, well, maybe I can, you know, just find it online. So I was nosing around their site. They actually have a pretty cool setup. They have an app that works on both iOS and Android. And you just download the app. It's free. And then you can either subscribe or you can just buy single issue. So I just bought this single issue for $3.99 for my iPad. The rest of the issue is actually really interesting as well. But this celebrating 100 years of Olympus, they really knocked it out of the park on this. It was far and away the best recap that I've seen. And I'm assuming that you know that Olympus had a 100-year birthday. If you didn't know that, that just happened. That just happened. So the kind of stuff that they have in this issue of Amateur Photographer, they celebrate all the cameras. They show all the milestones. There's lots of cool Olympus cameras going all the way back. You know, stuff that, you know, you probably wouldn't even know existed, like the Olympus Flex twin lens reflex, the Olympus 35 rangefinder. They have the original Pen-F pictures of that. So they have all this cool stuff. Of course, the original OM series. So they have all these great camera shots, and they talk about the history of Olympus and the development of these cameras. But it doesn't stop there, which is, you know, probably where, you know, most places would stop. Then they have an article where they show selected Olympus print ads, Britain print ads, from throughout the years. And, you know, these ads are very interesting. They were very kind of offbeat sort of ads. It's a cool article. They had another one, another piece, What Olympus Means to Me, written by some of the staff editors who like Olympus cameras. They have a discussion on the Micro Four Thirds era. They have, that's another article. And then one of my favorite articles was on the OM to the OMD. I've always, because I shoot with Olympus film cameras as well, I've always, you know, realized that connection, that aesthetic connection between that groundbreaking OM series for 35mm film cameras and how they carried so many of those good things over to the OMD line, the EM5 being the perfect example of what they have carried over from the OM line. So this is cool stuff. So if you're a fan of Olympus gear and you really want to revel in you know, some of the stuff and learn a lot of stuff, I mean, this is page after page. Again, you can just go to the Amateur Photographer site, or you can just go to either the iTunes store or the Google Play store, download the Amateur Photographer magazine app, and buy the magazine, $3.99. That's a lot of content. They did a lot of work on this, and it's really cool. All right, I have a little virtual camera club news for you. Inner Circle members, a big thanks to all those folks who support our podcast and who provide me with feedback and, you know, listen to me talk a little bit about the behind-the-scenes stuff on our Patreon site. If you want to become an Inner Circle member and support the show, remember, this show and the site are supported by readers and listeners, then just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can go over there, you can nose around, you can see what's happening, and if you want to become part of the Inner Circle, you can do so right there. A big thanks to our members. Thank you so much for your support. Coming up on November 9th, we have the Podcasting Skills course. If you want to know how podcasting works, this is the course to take. It's a Saturday course, November 9th. And even if you can't sit in the whole course, it'll be a live course online. You don't have to travel. You don't have to go anywhere. Stay at home. But even if you can't sit in all day at home, the whole thing is recorded. And for everyone who paid tuition, all those movies will be shared. And they're broken up by topic. So it's going to be a really cool thing. Even if you can't make it at all on Saturday the 9th, if you sign up, you still get all the movies. And you can just watch them whenever you want. It's like DVR for your podcasting course. And I'm going to cover a lot of neat stuff. Podcasting is a very interesting world, and there's lots to share there. We have B&H and Amazon tiles on all the pages of the Digital Story. If you're interested in something like the EM5 Mark III, if you go to those tiles or you use the links in the show notes, that helps support the site. And by the way, you know, now the FCC really wants us to be clear about this. I've always felt like I was clear about it, but now I'm going to be even clearer. The digital story is supported by its audience, and when you purchase through links on our site, we may earn an affiliate commission depending on that purchase. Alrighty, so I think you knew that already, but now I've said it very clearly. And let's see what else. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper for supporting this show, for supporting this effort, for supporting this community, and for making great inkjet printing paper. They also have envelopes, glassine sleeves, ink, you name it. If you want to make a print and you want it to turn out well, then go to Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. If you want to find out what kind of printer to get for making serious photographic prints, read their reviews. And they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I'm going to head out to Maui for a bit. Next week's show will be from Maui. Hope you look forward to that. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.